Perry K. Chowdhury on June the 4th, 1994. Harry, can you tell me about your father, why he came from Korea to Hawaii?
Well, from information I got from my parents that they originally came to immigrated to Hawaii because of the fear of the Japanese occupation in 1905. My father's parents, my grandfather, left Korea to go to Siberia to get away from this Japanese occupation. And my father was a young man, about 16 years old, nothing to do, so he decided to come to Hawaii, America. At that time, there was a drive on by the sugar plantation to recruit laborers to come to Hawaii to work. So he joined this group and went to Seoul and then finally came to Hawaii. This was way back in 1907, I believe. So then he established himself in Hawaii, in Honolulu.
In Honolulu?
Yes.
Then when did he go to Kahuku?
Well, he grew up in Honolulu from his early years, when he was 16 to about 22, I believe. He lived in Honolulu. On River Street, there was a compound for immigrants, primarily Korean immigrants. Many of them were there, and they were associated with St. Louis School and Iolani School. This is where he learned his English. It's remarkable that he learned to speak English so well, you know, amongst the immigrants that came to Hawaii. Then in the meantime, he applied for jobs throughout the plantation, and the Wailua plantation hired him in 1920, and in 1920 I was born. And at that time, he moved to Kahuku plantation in 1920 and worked for the Kahuku plantation. He stayed there till he retired.
In young and Yushai was born.
Well, do you want death too? Stuff like that?
Well,
he's the third son now.
Yeah, saying that the other two brothers have been deceased.
Yeah, he worked for Wailua Plantation, and we live in a place called Kemo, K-E-M-O-O. It was a isolated area away from the plantation homes in Wailua. And he worked in the power plant, the water pump. My oldest brother, a young child, was born there in 1915. My second oldest brother, Secho, was born in 1918 in Kemo. And I was born in 1920 in Kemo. Then my father and our family rather moved to Kahuku Plantation, where he was employed as a carpenter in the carpenter shop in Kahuku Plantation.
Can you tell me from your earliest memories what your father did at the carpenter shop and what his job was?
Well, he started off as a sort of a woodworking helper, you know, help the other carpenters. It was a small shop, only three or four people. And he worked as a helper, he learned the trade, repairing the employees' homes, all wooden structures. So at that time, so he worked in the carpenter shop with the other carpenters who were journeyman carpenters and helped them, and gradually learned the trade until he became a journeyman. Then worked in the carpenter shop, and more people came to the shop and were employed there as carpenters, and he eventually became the head of the shop.
As head of the shop, how many people were under him, and what were his duties like from the best of your recollection?
As the head of the carpenter shop, he was responsible for building homes for new employees that came to the plantation, repairing all homes, going out in the fields and fixing the flumes that carried the water to the cane fields, made wooden bridges and stuff like that. There was approximately 10 carpenters at that time under him working together.
And the tools he used were not modern like today. Did he
real simple carpenter tools. There were no power tools, all hand tools. And they used those to work, and they did a good job. Did a good job.
What time did your father wake up in the morning and leave the house?
Well, they woke up 5 o'clock in the morning. By that time, my mother had prepared his lunch. He carried his lunch to the shop and worked until 4 o'clock every day, from 6 to 4. But they get up 5 o'clock in the morning, the plantation blows a whistle from the sugar mill at 5 o'clock in the morning to help the people get up as an alarm. That's when he woke up, 5 o'clock, every morning.
And when he came home, did he have certain chores that he would do? What were his primary interests when he would come home, and what did he do?
Oh, they had gardening in the yard. You know, they raised vegetables and chickens and other animals, and you know, they're like a farm. You know, but on a small scale, only for household use. By that time, he had three sons, and you know, he had to feed them too. They were growing up, you know. Eventually, he got three more children, for a total of 6. Yes, we had 6 children, brothers and sisters. 1 sister, 4, 5 brothers.
What were the plantation house design that they were able to raise 6 children?
Well,
they were
bachelor quarters that had 1 or 2 rooms, you know, kitchen and a kitchen and a living room and a bedroom. The married people had 1 or 2 bedroom homes, and if you had big families, they get 3 bedroom or 4 bedroom homes. My father gradually moved up because as he became head of the shop, he had a bigger home. And with more children, he had a bigger house. So we had a 4 bedroom home eventually that was suitable for our family. By that time, he was the head of the carpenter shop, and he had about 15 carpenters under him, doing various jobs along the plantation, primarily repairing and building homes for the other employees.
Was your mother a picture bride?
Yes.
Can you tell me about how it is that she came to Hawaii as a picture bride, and who was the matchmaker?
Well, I don't know. I don't know all those things.
The matchmaker was Gladys Ann's mother.
Mrs. Cole. So that's how it began. Ah. And do you know, have your parents ever told you of what happened after your mother came here, and how they met and how they married? Did they ever say things
no.
to you?
Probably did, but I don't know. I don't know the story.
Gladys' mother was, they did nursing together in Korea. That's how she knew about it, about her.
I see.
She was a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm. Where in Korea is your mother from? What province or what town?
It's a town called Sinuiju. It's in the northernmost portion of Korea, right next to the Yellow River and the Manchurian border. It's a fairly popular town. It's big. Quite a large town, but that's where she came from.
That was a long distance to travel
from
that time. Your mother certainly must have had busy life, taking care of the children.
Oh, yeah,
raising six children.
Yeah.
From your memory, what was her life like?
Well, typical plantation life, you know. Get the men folks off to work and clean the house and feed the chickens and everyday chores around the house. It never worked outside, just around the house, you know. It's
so
a hard job. Plantation
she did all the laundry.
All the laundry, hand by hand. All the cooking.
Now the cooking, did she cook typical Korean food?
Typical Korean food. Every day.
When when your mother and father lived in Kahuku, were there many other Koreans there?
That's an interesting story. You know, not many families. There were about 6 or 7 families. Of the 7 families, 5 worked for my father in a carpenter shop. You know? So I grew up thinking only Koreans were carpenters. Because all the Koreans that lived in Kahuku worked in a carpenter shop under my father. There was one Korean who was an automobile mechanic, the Kim family. And nothing else. All the other Koreans were carpenters for some reason. Interesting.
Since your father had been able to speak English and Korean,
yes,
he probably was raised to the position of head of that department.
Oh, I'm sure that contributed. You know, it's a real remarkable that he could read English and speak fairly well, not fluently, but you know, enough to carry on a conversation. He read blueprints. You know, to interpret the jobs on that to be done. He could read the newspaper. Every day, our house never went out without a newspaper. We subscribed every day, newspaper. He could read Chinese, and we got a Chinese newspaper.
So there were 3 newspapers and the English newspaper.
Yeah. English, Chinese, and Korean paper that came to our house quite often.
Did both your parents or one parent stress education to you, or did you feel that was just a natural occurrence?
Oh, no. They spoke frequently about, you know, the value of education, you know, and they insisted that we go through high school. And at that time, you know, Kahuku never had a high school. So my oldest brother went to Maui, Lahaina Luna, to get his high school diploma. My other brother started various schools around the island but never made it. And I went to Leilua and I had to commute 27 miles every day.
One way?
One way, 27 miles.
And after school, yeah, that was 27 miles.
Yeah, we had a carpool, there were 5 of us, and we commuted.
Now, were the 5 that commuted part of the 5 Korean
children? No. All different nationalities, Japanese and Portuguese, and there was one Korean, the Kim family boy, my age.
Were your parents closely aligned with the Korean families, or did they associate with the entire community of plantation
workers? Oh no, you know, the Koreans in Kahuku all live close together, practically neighbors. You know, just like one small community. You know, 7 homes for all Koreans living, you know, in one area. They weren't scattered throughout the village. They're all in one area. Like the rest of the other nationalities, you know, there was one area where mostly Japanese lived. And Portuguese live in another area. Of course, some were interspersed, you know, throughout the village, but primarily, you can isolate the people, because, you know, this area is all for Portuguese, all for Japanese, and this is what the Koreans.
I guess they call it Japanese camp,
yeah,
Korean
camp. Yeah, that's why they had just Spanish camp and Filipino camp, and, you know, all these kind of ethnic names for the various areas where the people live. But they got along fine, you know. No animosity or anything like that. They got no good.
By the time you moved to Kahuku, wasn't the hospital there? Was the hospital there?
There was a small hospital, very small, which eventually grew, you know, enlarged. But at the beginning, it was very small. Just one doctor that was there, plantation doctor, with 1 or 2 nurses. No major operations or anything like that at that
more
time.
More like a dispensary, yeah.
So,
but gradually they got bigger and bigger, you know, as more people came in there.
Kahuku, being at the northern end, wasn't like the city. How did you get your supplies to?
Oh, they were trucked in or trained in or
plantation store.
Brought it in, you know, there were small, several small stores there. There was a plantation-sponsored plantation store, which brought most of the dry goods in, and the people go there to buy. But they had to truck it in from the city.
Now, speaking of transportation, and you're going to school, after you traveled back home from school, then you would have to do your homework, and you would have to help.
We had chores.
What were your chores?
Well, either feed the chickens, or go out in a garden and plant vegetables, or take care of the yard, you know, manicure the yard.
And what kind of games or recreation did you have with your peers on weekends or evenings?
Oh, the plantation sponsored all kinds of sporting events, you know. There was season of baseball season and basketball season and track meet and football and we all participated.
Sounded like a lot, actually a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, we had leagues that we competed with other plantations, you know, that had teams too, and we competed against each other. It was very interesting, a lot of fun. I played a lot of sports in my day.
Mm-hmm.
For Fokahoku. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because your father worked at the plantation from the beginning all the way to retirement, how was he looked upon as someone with such longevity? And finally, what was the part of his retirement regarding benefits?
Oh, he was well liked in the plantation, you know, well respected because of his position. He was a foreman of the shop and had people working under him, and he knew his job. And all the people liked him in the plantation, even though all the bosses and things like this had a lot of respect for him. So mm-hmm. They showed him a lot of courtesy and didn't give him a hard time at all. He got along fine with everybody. Until when he retired, he liked to go fishing, so he goes on the beach every day.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, the beach, we lived right next to the beach, you see.
You lived right next to the beaches, so that was a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, a lot of fun. He goes fishing every day.
I see. So you had good food.
Awesome. We had our share of fishing.
Uh-huh. Now, Were you ever in the military?
Yes.
So
I was drafted in 1940. I don't know sure what day, but I was drafted.
Right after the war ended. What year was that?
1945. Yeah, 1940 I went to Pearl Harbor to work. 1945. Drafted in the Army.
And where were you trained? And
Schofield Barracks.
In Schofield Barracks. Yeah. And after your training, did you remain on the islands or did you go away?
No, I remained on the island. All my duties were stationed right here on the island.
What was your military duty and where was it in relation to Kahuku, and were you always able to see your family then?
Oh yeah, I was in the Quartermaster Corps, and then went to, they sent me to school in the mainland for intelligence work. Then I came back as an agent, secret service, counterintelligence service, you know, intelligence work. That's where I finished.
Now, about your intelligence work, do you know to the best of your knowledge whether or not you're still bound by your top secret?
No.
Or whether or not the public information has released everything that has happened at that time?
Yeah, there's no secrets or anything like that.
Can you tell me what your work consisted of and what you were working in as a counterintelligence at Schofield Barracks?
Well, we primarily did background work for P people that apply for job with the government. You know, we look into the background to see if they got any problem or any inferior attitudes, you know, or stuff like this. It wasn't too bad, it wasn't hard.
And when were you discharged?
1946. No, yeah, that's 48. 1948.
Did you take advantage of the veteran bill to go to school, or did you went on your own?
Yeah, stupid.
After it expired,
when it expired, I went. Let me tell you about my schooling. That's an interesting portion of my life, you know. I went to Kahuku School, intermediate and up to the intermediate. Then there was no high school, so I went to Lilahua High School. But not immediately following finishing intermediate school in Kahuku, I waited a year because of the financing. Family wasn't that, you know, wealthy, so I worked for a year. Then I went to Lelehua for 3 years. I finished in 1939. I graduated in 1939. Then I went to Pearl Harbor to work. I got a job at Pearl Harbor. I worked there until I retired. But in the meantime, in 1954, I decided to go back to school. By that time, my GI benefits had expired, and I had children to raise. I was already married to her, and we had children. But I took the entrance examination, passed that test, and went to university during the night. And most of my courses were during the night because they gave courses, you know, for a final graduation by giving you these specific courses. Only the courses I couldn't take were lab courses, which I have to go during the day. Well, I'll come to that later. Anyway, I went to school during the night for 13 years to finish, to get a degree. Now, the University of Hawaii allows you 10 years, but doing work during the day and going to school at night, I couldn't make it in 10 years, so I went to see the dean. And he gave me a dispensation and he told me, okay, you take as long as you want, but finish up. So it took me 13 years to get my degree. During the course of my work, the lab courses were during the day, so I had to go see my boss at work and told him that I need to take a half a day off every day, no, three times a week, half a day off to go to school to do lab work, you know. So they said, okay, I should do that. So they gave me a permission. By that time, I was head of the shop. You know, I was kind of a responsible position. I was a general foreman. So they said, okay, just take off half a day and go to school. So in 1967, I graduated University of Hawaii with a degree, bachelor's degree in political science. But it took me 13 years.
Kind of a foreman were you, and what kind of a shop?
I was in charge of the carpenter shop. Approximately 100 employees under me, with 5 supervisors, and we repaired all the building and grounds belonging to the neighbors throughout the island, and off island, with like Kauai and Midway and French Riviera Shoals and all over. Wherever the Navy had facilities, we'd go, we'd send people down there to do the work. And that was my responsibility, to see that job got done.
Now, did you have to travel to all these places?
I did go to American Samoa 1 year. They sent me to Samoa, and I went to Midway Island, you know, to oversee that job. Then came back. Short trip. Not bad.
I'm sure you're very, very proud of having obtained your degree, and it reflects very strongly, I'm sure, upon perhaps a feeling of having fulfilled what your parents thought was so important. I see that your religion is a Methodist. Were you married in a Methodist church?
Yes.
You were married in, can you tell me what year you were married?
1946.
And you married a Korean woman?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And tell me about your children.
My children? Well, the three girls, that's all. they're all married, in fact. And two of them are living in San Francisco, and one is living here. Two grandchildren here, one girl and one boy. And I got two grandsons in San Francisco, and two great-grandchildren in San Francisco. Yeah. So, quite a family.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. One of the considerations going on around the United States is attention focused on ethnic groups. Can you tell me how you felt in your different phases of life about your Koreanness, and then now how you feel about being from that group who were very closely tied to their Koreanness and the differences as a result of time having gone by?
I don't think there's any problem with being Korean, you know, in Hawaii. We're all Americanized, and we don't talk too much about the old country, about Korea. We're just all Americanized, you know, and being Korean was just another group, you know. We don't single out any individual because of your Korean or your Japanese or your Filipino hood. We all live together, and we got along real well. All the ethnic groups, no problem at all. But when the Korean War started, we started to think learn more about the Korean itself, the individual Korean people. Then we learn all these things. We read about it in the paper, you know, we hear stories, and the newspapers are full of Korean things, you know, all of a sudden, and it made us proud. And I was proud to be a Korean. Never had any conflict with other nationalities because I was Korean. Got along well. No problem at all.
As you grew up, there was a time period when many of the Koreans aligned themselves here in Hawaii with one another, not only in the sense of being a family of Koreans, but there was a lot of the political implications.
Mm-hmm.
Kahuku, however, being way off at the north end, may not have had the strength of that affiliation. But were your parents at all able to speak out to you and to your family about their general feelings of what was going on in Korea, because your father read the papers?
At that time, you know, there was this stories about Syngman Rhee, and my father was anti-Rhee. And in the Korean community, there was about seven families. One other family was loyal to Syngman Rhee, and we had some words, but not a conflict, no battles or anything like this. They just followed their own feelings, you know. And my father was strongly in favor of the Korean National Association, and he belonged to a group called the Korean American Club, with the headquarters in Waiawa. he belonged there, and he went to meetings there once a month. And outside of that, I don't think he joined any other organization. But there were no anti-government feeling.
You mean anti-Japanese?
Anti-Korean.
Anti-Korean.
Or anti-Japanese, or anti-not anything. And eventually, when the opportunity for citizens opened up, he became an American citizen. Immediately. And it wasn't hard for him because he could read and write.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
That helped him out. He passed his test flying colors.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good.
One of the fascinating things about the, at least in my thinking, that has often been mentioned in writings, and in particular one Korean woman scholar, is how Koreans lived as a family, as a clan. Did you feel, that is to say, as a younger person, that kind of affiliation and that kind of openness that your mother and father had towards Korean? And do you still feel that way now, or do you feel that you have thoroughly assimilated and you're an American?
There was no such thing in our family. We were American, we were Americanized. Of course, we spoke some Korean at home. Our parents spoke Korean because they never did go to English school. I mean, my mother primarily. So my father could speak some English. My mother couldn't read English. And we never showed any affiliation for any other side outside of being American. Everything was Americanized to all our livelihood.
When you finished your military duty, did you when did you get married?
1946.
So you were still in the service,
yeah.
When you got married. Then after you were married, did you move away from home and stay in the Honolulu side, or did you go back to Kahuku?
No. We were living in Honolulu.
He moved out before we got married, you know. He was working at Pearl Harbor.
Did you have a close relationship with your father? And was it an open relationship? What was it like to be raised by a mother who was very Korean, and more so than?
Oh, our family is real open, real good family, friendly, you know. No conflict at all. There was no animosity between my brothers and myself, you know. We live day to day. And we do things as we please, you know, by ourselves, you know. We have certain responsibilities, of course, the chores to do, but outside of that, no problem at all. Real American family.
Tell me, what year did your father die?
74.
I have to look at
it. Was it about 74?
Yeah, about that.
And what about your mother?
76, I think. Something like that. She got the date.
Had they made their decision to be buried in Kahuku, or are they buried?
No. We had bought a cemetery plot at Nu'uanu.
I noticed in Nu'uanu Cemetery that there is like a big unit.
Mm.
All Koreans, as if
yes.
They're in a community.
Yes.
Are your parents buried in that
no,
section?
No, my parents are not there. There was a time when they first opened up the cemetery, there were salesmen going around to various Korean families and selling them burial plots, you know. This is the reason why there's a large area there that's all Korean. But my parents didn't buy at that time. They waited for a while, now for no particular reason. But eventually we bought two plots side by side, further up, on the other side of the cemetery, in Nu'uanu. And then they were buried there, side by side.
Getting back to your brothers, did everyone in your family marry a Korean?
No. My oldest brother married a Japanese. My second brother married a Japanese too. And I married a Korean, and my younger brother married a Korean. My sister married a Korean, and my brother married a Caucasian, but eventually got divorced.
And your children?
My children are, my oldest daughter is married to a mixed, mixed breed, he's Portuguese and Chinese and Japanese and Hawaiian, all kinds. My second daughter married a Chinese, and my youngest daughter married a Caucasian.
Your father died in 1963.
63.
And your mother died in 1970.
Oh, that's much different. Yeah, I forgot about
that. What would you say is an event in your life or events which made the greatest impact upon you that may have caused either a change and or a turning point? And what do you think that was?
Oh, I don't know. We don't have any specific period of time in our life where something spectacular happened. I think the concept of going to school was most important, and it gave me opportunities where I bettered myself at my job. You know, I steadily progressed up the promotional scale, you know, until I became head of the shop, which is a big job. Then I moved over into the production control department, where I had everyday responsibility of finding work for 1,800 people. So this was a big job, and which was the climax of my education, I think. Because, you know, as I go up the ladder of education, my promotions came in between, followed along, you know. And when I finished school, I reached the top of my level. So, you know, I thought education was a primary factor in my life, anyway.
This will conclude the interview of Harry K. Chow Yu on June the 4th, 1994.